Chapter 1, Tuesday, 14th January, 1964. Steps at the Capitol Building, Washington, D.C. It was a brutally cold, raw winter's day in this savagely mauled but unbroken capital city of the United States of America. It had snowed again overnight, but the morning had brought crystal clear azure skies, pocked with fast-scudding high clouds, and a bright, dazzling sunshine that seemed to mock the frozen ground and the foggy frost that every breath expelled. The great crowd had been gathering along Pennsylvania Avenue all morning, its ranks swelling from every side as the people of the great city came together to mourn the slaughter and the destruction of the insurrection, and to celebrate their survival. Looking down Pennsylvania Avenue from the steps of the Capitol building, where he had been sworn in as the 35th President of the Republic 6 days short of 3 years before, John Fitzgerald Kennedy was a little surprised by how perversely normal the city seemed beneath its wintry coat of freshly fallen snow. If he tried very hard, he could almost forget the fire-blackened and blasted building behind him, the desecration of the Smithsonian, the depressingly long list of great public buildings wrecked by truck bombs and left to burn down as for 3 awful days the fighting had raged, washing up and down the wide boulevards of the city like riptides of death. The tanks and armored personnel carriers which had rumbled down those streets a month ago were parked in and around the city, a comforting presence for the survivors. F-4 Phantoms orbited the Capitol constantly, their thunderous jets never so distant as to be beyond the edge of human hearing. No civilian aircraft was permitted to overfly Washington or approach within 50 miles of it. No vehicle could enter it without first being exhaustively searched at one of a dozen nominated entry points. Navy gunboats patrolled the Anacostia and the Potomac rivers, their captains granted absolute powers of seizure and operating under rules of engagement which allowed them to shoot first and ask questions later. The 101st Airborne Division and elements of the 3rd Marine Division had invested every corner of D.C., and each member of the cruelly depleted Washington, D.C. Police Department now had as many as half a dozen heavily armed paratroopers or Marine Corps grunts at his back when he or she ventured out onto the streets. Regardless of the fact that large parts of the U.S. government had already decamped to Philadelphia, including the entire House of Representatives under the leadership of the Vice President, the rule of law would be enforced in the nation's capital, and its hard-pressed citizens would henceforth live in safety. Or rather, in relative safety. After the events of the previous month, nobody in the administration was under any illusion that anybody anywhere was safe in the messed-up, brave, new post-October war world. There were still those who claimed, perhaps they even believed it, that the war had been some kind of catastrophically disguised blessing in disguise. The argument went something like this. If the war had happened in, say, 10 years' time, both sides would have accumulated such huge thermonuclear arsenals that the whole world would have been consumed by the atomic fires, from which others concluded, at least this way, the greater proportion of humanity had lived through the Holocaust. Jack Kennedy did not subscribe to that school of thought. He had done what he had thought was right that evening in late October 14 months ago. He would live with the guilt and pain of it for the rest of his life, and surely be damned to eternal perdition in the afterlife, if such a thing really existed. Among other things, his belief in a loving, merciful God had died that night in October 1962, when the ICBMs flew and Curtis LeMay's B-52s had burnt and blasted their way across the Soviet hinterlands. But that was then, and this was now. And against all rational expectations, the world was a no less frightening place. A month ago, there had almost been another war. Yes, another war that the USA would have surely won. But at what price? What was victory worth if afterwards one was utterly friendless? Not that Jack Kennedy was going to fall into the trap of thinking that Margaret Hilda Thatcher, the premier of the newly formed Unity Administration of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, was ever going to be his best friend, let alone soulmate, in the crusade to build a new world out of the ashes of the old that was the fond dream of so many Americans. The President of the United States of America nodded respectfully to the attractive